Thanks for listening to this episode of Fluff and Crunch. In today's episode, Chris gives me an overview of the massive world, or maybe worlds, really, of Warhammer. We talk about the history of the game, games, that is, and the current state of the role-playing side of this property. Make sure to check the notes on the podcast or the YouTube version of this episode. Like and subscribe, join our Discord, and definitely get involved in the conversation because I know that there are a lot of folks out there with a lot of experience with this massive property, and we'd like to know what you think about it. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good evening, Jeremy. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. I'm doing very well, thank you.
Have you got your various lurgies and germs and illnesses?
You know, I still have this stupid 100-day cough. I think I'm about 27 days, maybe 28 days into my 100-day cough, but it's not so bad.
It's a literally that. It's crazy that thing is like a transatlantic thing, because I'd heard it on the news and I was like, this isn't a real thing. And I had someone at work say, yeah, my husband literally got told by their doctor they have the 100-day cough. And I was like, hi, I didn't think that was real.
Yep.
So, but yeah, it's
real
a thing.
Or not, that's what I've been told. So, any
How about gaming news? Then?
Gaming, that's better. Let's see. We finally went back to Kingmaker in Castles and Crusades, and we just about finished the first book. The team attacked the Stag Lord's fort and defeated the Stag Lord and decided to figure out a way to let the owlbear that the Stag Lord had trapped go. And now they own the Stag Lord's fort, and they have some wrapping up. There's a little bit of story activity that they want to play through instead of just we narratively hand wave through it. They want to play through that. So we have one session left in this first book, and then we'll move to the second book and incorporate those kingdom building rules that are in the second book forward. So it went well. It was good. And we've added a fifth player, which is great.
All right, cool.
Yeah, we have a fifth player who actually was one of the players in my original run of Kingmaker over a decade ago.
Oh, wow.
But I've tweaked stuff. And so he's happy to be back at the table. How about you?
So we played our third session of 40K Wrath and Glory, which is the first session with different characters. Because the second session we played had this whole war thing going on. And at the end of it, it made this point that you could play in the same battle, like a big invasion type thing, but with a different tier. So we did that. So essentially it was the same overall arching battle, the same end thing about saving ball bearings or something, but with completely different characters and a different part of the story, which was, I've never seen that done before. But yeah, it's like we can play this adventure sort of for different things, and they're all in the same battle, but it's from different parts of the battle with different squads.
That's pretty cool.
Which is quite cool. So, yeah, we did that, and we had and their characters survived. Which at one point we were like, oh, they're gonna die. This is bad. This character's totally gonna die. And then, I don't know how they got out of it. Actually, they didn't die. But there was definitely a point where I was like, yeah, Scott's character is a goner.
Lucky it's just on paper. You can make another one.
Yes.
But that gives us a very, very clean segue into today's topic, which is Warhammer. Warhammer, today, really, actually, I'm glad for this, and I'm looking forward to it. Warhammer writ large, Warhammer as a property, and then by the end of this episode, we'll dial that down to what you're doing right now, and then this will actually be the first in several episodes. We'll spread out over time about all things Warhammer and different, more particular things Warhammer. So we want to talk about what the heck is Warhammer, where's it from, and what does it comprise from the 30,000 or 10,000 meter view, something like that.
40,000.
40,000, that many. Okay. Where do we start?
I'll go right back to the start. It's funny because actually, when I typed in Warhammer on Google, wanted an image like the one I ended up with, the first thing it actually gave me was lots of things of Warhammer 40,000. I was like, I want that. That's to a lot of people. That's what Warhammer is, like 40,000. You know, look at the picture. I have trouble with my mirror on my screen. The 40,000 is very small. The Warhammer's big. Warhammer originally was a fantasy property. I mean, the guys who made it, they started off just making miniatures. And at that point, they were making miniatures, and they had a magazine called White Dwarf, and that would have D&D and stuff in it. They were basically making those miniatures so you could use miniatures for D&D. And in their shops, which in the shop was called Games Workshop, They were selling D&D stuff. You could go in there, you know, it was a role playing shop. You would buy their miniatures, and you know, you could buy D&D stuff, and it was for role playing and games and things. And that's how it started. Now, very early on, they created, this is the 80s-ish, they created a property called Warhammer. And Warhammer is a pretty bog standard fantasy setting. It was kind of set sort of medieval things. So one of the big settings was called the Empire, very human-centric setting, but kind of set sort of the Germanic, kind of that gothy Germanic period. And then near that you had the Bretonians, who were basically the French knights. And then most of the other stuff in it was very generic. If you go down to Egypt, it was all skeletons and pharaohs. You had elves who lived in the forest, or they never lived in another place, where they were high elves. So you had both kinds of elves that we see in like Lord of the Rings. You had dwarves. The dwarves lived in mountains and did mining, straight out Lord of the Rings. You had orcs and goblins, just like Lord of the Rings. So a lot, really early on, it was a very, very bog standard setting. The one thing that set it apart was the idea of chaos. So you had this sort of all-consuming, it's not even evil, this like all-consuming thing, which would destroy everything, this force of chaos. And that wasn't there at the start. This came in over time. But chaos is the thing that then links the Warhammer to the other one. So that's how Warhammer started. And it started as a miniature game. And over time, that's how Games Workshop moved. They stopped selling other people's stuff. You know, there was no D&D links anymore. It was, and White Dwarf just became a catalog for selling their miniatures. Right. And a lot of the time they've said, look, we are a company that sells miniatures, and we make games to help you play your miniatures. They've never, you know, they're not, that's, they're quite open about that at points. Mm. People get cross about it, but that's the reality. So that was Warhammer. And then a bit later on in the 80s, after it was about third edition Warhammer, so it's about maybe 5 or 6 years, they came out with Warhammer 40,000. And this is the thing that really became big. And even now, you know, Warhammer 40,000 is huge. This is the biggest miniatures game in the world by an absolute mile. It's not close. Like the second closest thing would be their sort of fantasy version, but that's not close. Warhammer 40,000 is massive, massive enough that we have tons of computer games for it, you know, hundreds of novels. I mean, most people think, oh, D&D, there's lots of D&D novels. I don't know this for sure, but I would be willing to bet that there are more Warhammer 40,000 novels than D&D novels. You know, these guys are prolific. You have people like Dan Abnett, who's quite a famous author. He only writes Warhammer 40,000 stuff, as far as I know. And it's big enough now that Amazon have signed up Henry Cavill after the Witcher fiasco to basically be a showrunner. I mean, I don't know why I was going to say, I don't know why you get an actor to be a showrunner. Well, the reason is because Henry Cavill lives and breathes Warhammer 40,000. Like, gotcha. When he's not acting and being Superman or Geralt, he's sitting there painting. You ever look on YouTube and find interviews of any time someone asks Henry Cavill about Warhammer, you just see his like eyes open up and he just turns into a massive nerd. And he'll be just talking about painting miniatures and the lore and everything else. And he just changes. That's his thing.
That's like Rod Stewart and model trains.
Yeah, it's hilarious to watch. So Amazon have made a deal with Games Workshop and signed up Henry Cavill to basically make them a Warhammer 40,000, you know, TV and film series.
Let me just jump in here. When I think of Warhammer 40K, which I've never played Warhammer 40K. I owned, and I know we're about to get to the role-playing game, I owned the first edition of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay.
Yeah.
When it came out a billion years ago, and read it for a while and was interested in it, but just never really could get anyone to play it. Was playing tons of other things at the time and then sold it. But the thing with Warhammer 40K is that, I mean, there's a whole aesthetic. I feel like it is entirely from that game. Like, they not only created this massive miniatures game, they also with it created an aesthetic and a vibe. They created this massive lore and this world that looks a very certain way. Yeah. So I think that is a degree of call it creative property success that few things, especially from the gaming world,
yeah,
get.
I mean, it's massive. This is why when they talk about, you know, turning it into screen, there's an awful lot of stuff they can take. I mean, the original Warhammer, I'll get to it, but part of the reason this says Age of Sigmar is because at some point, the fantasy thing really wasn't doing anything. There was people who liked it, you know, your hardcore people that liked it, but it really was just a very, very bog standard fantasy thing. The special stuff about it was the chaos stuff and a few things. Okay. Warhammer 40,000, like I said, that is completely new. It's set literally 40,000 years in the future. There's a whole big long history, which would take me multiple episodes to, you know, go and look on YouTube or find someone else doing a podcast on this. You will find hours and hours and hours of content of people going over the whole 40K background. But the short version is, it's like nominally the humans are the good guys. And then you have, again, chaos is there. So this evil force of chaos, which is like in the warp. So kind of like you have, if you think of either Star Trek, Star Trek is a weird example. You kind of go through, like, to travel from light speed is, so big distances, you have to travel through something called the warp. And in the warp is where chaos live, which basically means to travel long distances, you open yourselves up to the forces of chaos. And as there's well, force chaos, then you have all these different alien races. You have like the orcs, but they're space orcs. They're just crazy pirates who like launch themselves through space. So they're quite different from fantasy orcs. And then you have like a bunch of other fantasy, you know, space evil monster. Right? There's literally ones that are just, they're straight up aliens. They started as things that look like aliens out of the Alien films, and now they've progressed into this whole other bigger thing. But the, like you said, the aesthetic, it's literally grim dark. It's like the whole thing says, you're in the endless whatever of the 40,000, the 41st millennium, there is only war. It's horribly oppressive and miserable. Like, nothing is good. Everything is miserable. There's the chaos is going to destroy, you're going to be corrupted or destroyed by chaos, or the aliens are going to come and get you. And then if you're living on a human planet, well, then your own people are out to get you. Because like there's an Inquisition, and the Inquisition will get you because you're a heretic, or you're a mutant, or you're psychic, or you're tainted by chaos. And you know, this, the whole aesthetic is very much, the reality is people who say that there's like the space marine, you know, the big hulking guys and they're really big, you know, the big shoulder pads. Sure. Anyone who thinks these are the good guys, it's like, you need to read it more carefully. It's very clear. If you read into it, it's, you know, it's basically, these are space fascists.
Yeah.
These are not nice people. It's like space fascists backed up by a ridiculously hardcore version of, like, you know, the Spanish Inquisition and a bunch of warrior nuns who kill anyone who doesn't toe the line. They mistrust technology because they think it's all being corrupted and stuff. So yeah, it's a pretty miserable, dark, oppressive, quite nasty in a lot of places, you know, setting.
It sounds to me like it provides such stark contrast that it enables you in play on the role-playing game side of it. Forget about the miniature side, which is pretty straightforward. I mean, miniatures, you're just fighting against other people's miniatures. But it sounds to me like on an RPG side that it provides such incredibly stark contrast that it enables you to focus and not have to think about, well, like, what do I do in my downtime? What does my character do? What are my character's dreams? You're like, well, that stuff just doesn't really play into this all that much. That's what it sounds like, at least. I don't know if that's, you know, I remember from the first edition RPG, which I remember it weighed a ton.
It
was an oversized book. It was like taller, I think I remember, you know, than
yeah, most. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And it was a perfect bound paperback that was very heavy. Like surprisingly heavy. And I remember I always got the vibe looking at it that everything was slightly damp and moldy and mossy. That was the feel. And that everything was like a little bit like cloudy, overcast and, you know, grim and tainted and not good. Everything was a little dirty, figuratively and literally. And I know that that's what was talked about in it. Now, just to confirm, Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer 40K, this same universe.
No.
Oh.
Originally, I think that's what they were going for. Warhammer 40,000 is our future. So the like the emperor that existed at some point and then in the future is now just like a vegetable, basically. That'd be heresy. He lived on our Earth. So it is actually, yeah, it's 41st millennium of our Earth. So it is our thing weighing through. So Earth exists. Earth's a planet.
Okay.
We have the High Lords of Terror. The moon is where all of the stuff, where stuff happens. The Mars is a big thing. But the galaxy's so much bigger than that. You know, it's not often you talk about Earth, but no, it's our, they made that disconnect at some point. I think originally that was the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point they said, no, this is our Earth, 41,000, whatever it is, years. No, it's 41 millennium in the future.
Yeah, it's a long ways out. So it's instead of like, you know, Pathfinder and Starfinder supposedly being in the same, this is not. They've broken the timelines. Okay.
Yeah. Let's go on to the role-playing stuff, and then I'll talk about this at some point, because that will come up in it. So yeah, the original one, Games Workshop did do it. One of the famous things about, there's a couple. So the original Warhammer uses a percentile system. It was pretty deadly. And one of the things you mentioned in a mess you said to me is that it had a very interesting career system.
Yes.
So you could start off, you could be lucky and you could start off like a warrior or a soldier or something. But there were jobs. You could start off as a rat catcher or something really silly, like, you know, just a merchant. Or
I remember the circus strongman.
Yeah.
Who was noted for eating raw meat.
Yeah. So there were literally things where it was just like a normal job, basically. You could start off as like you're a normal dude and then you find something. And then you could, as you got XP, you could spend it on getting better within that career. But at some point you could choose to jump to another career. And some careers had pretty good progression. Like if you were a wizard, you'd start with like an apprentice and then you become like a sort of starting wizard. And then you're like a wizard and then you're like a archmage or something. And other things you'd have to basically just jump to another career. But that means you could start as your strong man, and then you can decide you're going to become the town guard. And that would give you different talents and skills that you could learn. And then you go, right, well, I'm going to become a knight. And then that's it. So then you moved into this whole other thing. And so it was a really clever and different system for how they did that. And in all the different versions, they've carried that on to some extent. But I always thought that was really cool. The other things I remember was things like there was a first game I saw with a critical hit table where the game was pretty deadly. Like if you hit people, you're rolling on this critical hit table and it's, you know, you're decapitating people and taking their limbs off and getting really nasty injuries. So actually, if you played kind of like Call of Cthulhu, if you played Warhammer for any decent amount of time, your characters probably either ended up like so badly injured they couldn't go on, or just mad or corrupted by chaos. Because you could have both. You could become insane, you could be corrupted by chaos, you could just be injured beyond belief. So
this is not a shiny happy world, and the mechanics reflect
no that. pretty unlikely. And then there was a second edition out, which I'm not sure, this, it seems to have had multiple publishers, because I'm sure Green Ronin published it at some point, and then Fantasy Flight bought the rights
to... Right, I remember the big box set with all the bajillion little pieces. Yeah.
Now, that was controversial. They totally changed it. Like, apart from sort of the stat line, it, you know, it had funny dice, so it went from being a D100 system to being... Essentially, it's the precursor to the Star Wars Fantasy Flight games, which then became Genesis. And actually, of course, we know there's a lot of overlap between the Star Wars Fantasy Flight games, Edge of the Empire, etc., and 2D20. And the first time those narrative dice appeared, that was in Warhammer 3rd edition, where you had these different colored dice.
Yep.
And you still had a career's ideas. Everything else was still the same. It was still relatively oppressive. It was probably a bit more heroic, mm-hmm. but you still had critical damage to you, and you still had, you know, easy ways to die. You still had corruption and insanity and everything else. You just had these funny dice. So a lot of people were like, well, we really liked first, and see, the second edition was really a polishing of first edition. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were like, well, we really liked those. We just wanted more of that. We didn't want something completely
this wholesale
different.
Change. Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing Warhammer 3rd edition set up at a game convention where I was running a game. This was at like a neighboring table, and I was just amazed by the number and the variety of little counter things. It was like, yes, this weird hybrid, yeah, between a board game, a war game, and an RPG. What's the current state of the RPG for Warhammer in general?
So we've ended up with another property there, which I'll get to. So in terms of basic Warhammer, and then I'll do 40K, and then I'll do the new one, because those are the two new ones I'm playing. Fantasy Flight eventually lost the license for Warhammer to Cubicle 7. Is that right? Yes. Who are a British or Irish company. They used to be based in Britain, but for, I'm going to have to go with tax purposes, they moved to the Republic of Ireland. So if you order, unfortunately, I mean, when they did that, suddenly shipping became expensive.
It went right up, didn't it?
Yeah, which is a bit annoying. But you know, so they're technically they're not British, because the Republic of Ireland is not in Britain
anyway. Yeah.
But yeah, so they're, you know, for they're from the British Isles, if that works.
So they're in a wet, mossy, moldy place, which fits the, yeah.
Yeah. And they created a fourth edition. Their fourth edition went back to the old first and second. So it's back to being a percentile system. You have careers. One of the things they did different now is that all of your careers have like vertical paths. You can still start with your silly, I think, because I bought it and I haven't really read it, but you can still start with your kind of rat catcher, bounty hunter things, but you don't have to jump to another career to get progression. You can kind of go to the next version of yours and the next version. So they kind of did a, there's not the breadth of careers there were previously, but everyone has that sort of vertical progression.
Okay, so it gives you options to either stay in or branch out.
Yeah, and they're going pretty steady with that. Now, obviously, one of the weird things is that at some point in the past, that Warhammer setting was binned off by Games Workshop. In 2015, or around 2015, Games Workshop decided through a couple of things. It was very hard to protect the IP when most of your IP is knights, orcs, elves, and dwarves. So they destroyed the world. They did a thing called, in the miniatures game, called the End Times, and they literally destroyed the setting, which is called the Old World. Lots of people were very unhappy, but they did that because they wanted to have better control of their IP. I mean, they did similar things in Warhammer 40K. They, you know, they renamed things. So the Sisters of Battle becomes the Adeptus Sororitas, because you can copyright that.
Yeah,
that makes sense. The Space Marines become the Adeptus Astartes, and the Eldar had an A put on the front of it. They did a lot of, you know, rebadging, so then they could copyright the hell out of everything, and it's all their IP. Luckily, the designs were already different anyway. Until Zack Snyder did Rebel Moon, because if you are familiar with 40K and you watch Rebel Moon, there was a point where a bunch of guys come out of a spaceship, and you're like, they're wearing 40K out.
They look familiar.
Yeah, and the guns look very much like 40K guns. So you're like, okay, so he couldn't do Star Wars, so instead he ripped off Warhammer 40K. Anyway, so GW nuked their setting and then created a new setting, Age of Sigmar, which originally felt very vague. It was a very vague, very wishy, what was called in the setting.
This is
a
fantasy setting.
It's fantasy. It's, you'd have to call it something like mythic or heroic fantasy. There's not even a world. It's set in something called the Mortal Realms, which I still struggle to work out. Are these flat planes or are they globes? Or I think they literally, when it says realms, that's what they are. They are kind of floating nebulous realms. And essentially one of them's like a sort of, it's almost like the elementary, you think like, you know, Starjammer and Planescape, there's realms. They're not planets. Right. They're planes of existence. It's closer to that.
Rules, where like different norms and rules are.
Yeah, to some extent. So there's one where there's like life is stronger. One is where it's ever changing because it's based on metal. One where, you know, there's the celestial plane where the Sigmar, who's the god of good stuff, hence Age of Sigmar, where he lives. You know, it's like that. There's a bunch. I don't need to go into the details. And then what they did is they put in sort of the bits people liked about sort of Warhammer. They took those and cherry picked them. So one of the things people liked about, say, dwarves were you had these troll slayers, you had these big mohawks and only carried an axe and wore no clothes.
I remember.
So they just created a whole bunch of them called fire slayers. So now they're these guys that live in the sort of the fiery area. And there's just a whole bunch of them that just run around with massive fire axes because they thought that would be cool. They took the fact that they liked dwarves who were more into tech. There's a whole bunch of people. I mean, you could see it. They just built a bunch of them called the Cadoran Skylords. They're basically steampunk dwarves. They all just fly around in big dirigible ships, you know, massive frigates with jetpacks, and they're all wearing suits of armor because they thought that would be cool. And they just took all those bits, which are like, you know, they took the non-generic stuff out of their Warhammer system, dialed it up to 11, and just created a setting just for that. So it's super gonzo. It's properly crazy. I mean, it's taken and sort of, we're not in 24 now. It took until last year before they really started going back down to the sort of, well, there are these cities where the people live, and this is the people who still live there and went back. Oh, they do still exist, because for a long time it was like, because they did, the Cubicle 7 got the license and started making stuff for Age of Sigmar. And I remember thinking, I don't understand how the setting works. The kind of stuff I've said about like Mutant Chronicles and so on.
So the only focus was on the action.
Yeah.
The explosions, the battle, not anything that was outside of or off screen.
I
get it.
I really struggle to embrace that setting because I'm like, okay, I can see the art and I get like the different factions. And again, it's one of those things, when it's set up for a war game, it makes sense. But I think it's only in more recent years where they've started toning it. And there's still all the crazy stuff. There's still gods fighting gods and huge wars and jumping through these you know, portal gates that take you from one realm to another. But like, well, where's the actual normal people? Where do they live? And, you know, so it's taken, I think it took a while before they kind of got clearer on that stuff. But that now, that has a role-playing game. So in that, it's called Warhammer Age of Sigmar Soulbound. So why they felt the need to give it an extra subtitle on top of the one it already
maybe
has.
Just but to
they
differentiate
did.
It so that people are clear on what it is.
But that has a completely, totally separate system. It's a system which was designed, it doesn't come from anywhere else. It was designed 100% just for Age of Sigmar, but because it's got this more mythic, heroic, okay. You know, super, almost superheroes
still,
in fantasy.
Is it still percentile-based?
No, no, it's a D6. Oh, wow. Okay. It's a D6 dice pool thing. It's completely different.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so that's the second system that Cubicle 7 have. So you have fourth edition Warhammer, which has gone back to the old percentile system, mm-hmm. set in the old Warhammer world, which they destroyed. And now you have this Age of Sigmar role-playing game. Okay, so that's where the fantasy setting lies. Now, obviously, we also have Warhammer 40,000.
Yep.
When Fantasy Flight had the license, I think GW released one role-playing book, but it was literally one book, and then they decided, role-playing games weren't worth it for them. And Fantasy Flight created a bunch of books based on this thing called Dark Heresy. It was, again, a percentile system.
I remember
but it wasn't,
hearing about that.
It wasn't really similar to Warhammer in anything other than like the old WFRP one, the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game. It was percentile, and that was about it. That's about the only thing it has in common. Mm-hmm. It's much more, you have to pick a starting archetype. And the idea of Dark Heresy is that you would be like the agents of an Inquisitor. So your okay. boss would be an Inquisitor who's like, you know, so you're searching out either aliens or chaos or heretics or mutants or rebels or whatever.
So very clear types of stories, maybe limiting over time, but very clear as to what you're supposed to go do.
So over time, they added extra books. So, you know, they added extra things you could play. And then they actually, what they'd start doing, almost kind of like what they ended up doing in Star Wars, they added extra core books. So having had Dark Heresy, it was very clear, you are the Inquisition. Mm-hmm. And then they added another core book called Rogue Trader. And Rogue Traders are like, they're basically space merchants, but they also do a bit of exploration. I mean, they're kind of like a cross between Star Trek and Han Solo. You know, they're a bit like smugglers, but they're a bit like explorers.
Is Dark Heresy, is that still supported? Is that still in print or no?
No.
Okay.
I'll get to that, but yeah.
Okay.
So they did say, so Dark Heresy, so you're the Inquisition. What was the one I just said? Rogue Trader, mm-hmm. It's such a weird gonzo idea. I bought it and they couldn't really get on with it. They released a book called Only War, where you're part of the army.
Heard about that, yeah.
Doing army stuff. And then they released Death Watch, which almost feels like it's Space Marines, Space Marines are the big guys of 40K. Big, chunky suits, they're really cool. Yep. But you have to paint your whole army the same color because it's that group of Space Marines. Death Watch is what GW created for people who want to have, I want a Space Wolf and an Ultramarine and a Blood Angel and a Dark Angel. How do I get all them together? Well, Death Watch is like, they're part of the England, but they're all of the cool Space Marines going to a special forces unit. They're like, you know, like one of those films where
40K A-team.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, you know, someone's gone and picked the best of the best and put mm-hmm. them in one team. So that was Death Watch. And then they did a Chaos book as well, where you got to basically play the proper bad guys, which actually makes more sense because these are meant to be like, you know, half demon, mind altered, crazy people.
So let me just make sure, because this is very complicated.
Yes,
there's
it is.
A lot of Warhammer.
I haven't finished yet.
I believe
I will summarize.
So what I'm curious about is what are the current RPGs for Warhammer, current as in print and supported? Forget about everything else. And
then Warhammer, because I'd almost got there.
Okay.
So Warhammer, we have fourth edition, which is basically like the first and second by Cubicle 7. You can play in the old world.
Game.
That's a fantasy game. Yes. You're in the bog standard old world fantasy game.
Gotcha.
You know, where you're probably in the Empire. It's medieval, but chaos is underneath everything.
So it's very much like first edition, but in terms of the story backdrop and a similar system, percentile based.
Yeah, very similar. Okay. It's like a modified and more modern and tweaked and nicer version. But it's essentially that system.
So that's one.
Age of Sigmar only has one edition. That exists. That's again by the same company, Cubicle 7. There's quite a lot of stuff for it. And it has its own completely D6 dice pool system.
So, and that is this is different vibe, this heroic,
very different
legendary.
Vibe. Yeah.
Okay. So that's two fantasy Warhammer role playing games.
So, when Fantasy Flight lost the license for Warhammer, momentarily, the company called Ulysses Spiel, which is essentially it's a German company, but has an American part to it, they're the guys who do Torg.
Yeah, I remember.
They released sort of one and a bit books for Warhammer 40,000 for a new system called Wrath and Glory, which is a D6 dice pool system. When Cubicle 7 got the license, they took that, tweaked it. There's some weird bits in it. And that is the main current 40K thing now. So it's a bit more open. One of the things of the old system was it was much more like low level. You had to be, you know, you could be the agents, but if you wanted to play an Inquisitor, it kind of broke the system.
Okay.
Wrath and Glory, the whole point of it, and this is the one I've started playing, so I will talk about this in more detail, another thing. One of the ideas has tiers. You can play that, the really rubbishy guards or scum gangers or whatever, or you can go right up to playing the Inquisitors and the big ass space marines and stuff. And
so
that's,
the one game is meant to enable you to play at these different levels. Okay.
And then confusingly, a year ago, they released another Warhammer 40,000 system called, I think it's called Imperium Maledictum, which goes back to being a percentile based. So it's going back to being like Dark Heresy, because I think some people felt that Wrath and Glory was good if you wanted to do a bit more sort of guns and violence 40K. But if you wanted to do a bit more of the investigation stuff, it didn't cover it. Now, the first session we played of Wrath and Glory was very investigative. And it worked fine. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure why they needed to do a whole nother setting other than to catch all of those people that went, I really liked having a D100 thing. We're going to make a game with you. So currently, and notice I'm saying currently there are four Warhammer role-playing games. One for Warhammer, old school. Mm-hmm. One for Age of Sigmar and two for 40K.
Okay.
But having GW just relaunched the old world, so the world they destroyed, they're going back and doing miniatures of that. They've announced they're going to do an old world role-playing game as well. Wow. And at that point, there will be five different in-print current Warhammer-based role-playing games, which is bonkers.
We know that given the miniatures, how big the miniatures, you know, it's the biggest in the world pretty much. You know, the role-playing audience is always going to be smaller, but given the massive size of the Warhammer community, all different types, five different games, that sounds like a lot, but, you know, if they've got an audience for it, groovy.
I mean, to me, it's excessive. On the flip side, 2D20 has more different things than that.
Sure.
And
but
they're
not
as well
sitting
supported
within the same universe.
No,
they don't treat,
but these
like,
are
Star
all
Trek Adventures doesn't treat every single like.
No, but you know, if you think what we're saying is, we've said repeatedly that actually 2D20 does a really good job of making sure that each game in 2D20 is changed for its setting. Well, actually, these are different settings. Like Warhammer is different from Age of Sigmar, which is different from Warhammer 40,000. Now, I do think creating a second Warhammer 40,000 game, that to me didn't make any sense. That was a bit odd.
But if there's a dramatically different story angle, if you want to call it that, then maybe instead of trying to shoehorn new system, we're going to come out with a second edition that can do these other things, maybe it's better to just treat it as something completely different.
I think that's it. I think Wrath and Glory is a 10 if you're gonzo over the top shooting it. You know, your answer to everything is shooting them with a bolt gun. That's Wrath and Glory. Whereas I think they wanted more an investigation thing. I mean, like supposedly the combat rules aren't even going back to the old Dark Heresy. It's meant to be investigation and doing things that way. I'm not convinced they needed another one, but you know, all of these are getting supported. I mean, and that's one thing I have to say for them is that actually, you know, I've been playing Wrath and Glory. That has books coming out. It's just in the month that I've been doing it, you know, we've had sort of two new books either announced or PDFs coming. Same with Age of Sigmar. That is getting constant. You know, that gets a bunch of things a year. The new book is getting stuff and the old Warhammer stuff, that's still getting stuff as well. So they are supporting all these lines, which, you know, there's other games where they drop a core book and that's all we ever see.
Yeah.
So all of these lines are getting support. I think a lot of people think the reason they're getting a new role-playing game for Old World is because GW said, we've just dropped a new world. We want a role-playing game for it. And it could well be in their contract. I don't know that. But yeah, so at the moment, there are currently four separate ones. What I am playing is, I have been playing Wrath and Glory, so I will be able to talk about that. And we've really been enjoying that. But we're going to move on to playing Age of Sigmar, the role-playing game. And so then I'll be able to talk about that.
Excellent. And that's what we'll do in subsequent episodes about this.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's excellent. I hope, you know, hey, if you have, if you're listening or watching and you've got experience with any of these, because boy, howdy, there are enough of them, or you're playing these now or interested in it, you have questions about them, you know, get, as we always say, you know, like, subscribe, get involved in the conversation, join the Discord, so on and so forth. Drop comments down here if you're watching this on YouTube. Let us know what you think about these, and if you're playing the different ones, what you think of the worlds and what, how well, because next time when we talk in more detail about one of the properties, I'd like to really talk about how the system works and how the system hopefully supports this very distinct vibe, especially this separation of the RPGs into so many different, you know, subtypes, how well those systems work to do that. So we'll pick that up with one of those next time. Excellent.
Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. Do that. Give till it hurts.
No.
Thank you, as always, for listening to Fluff and Crunch. You can join our Discord. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, all through the links in the show notes. Thanks again. Have a great day. We look forward to talking with you.